Our theme for 2016 is creating a world that works for all. And following along with that theme, in order to create a world that works for all, here's an attitude that's essential. Great, okay. We see a world in which humanity rediscovers the creative power of thought. We can just leave that up through the talk, just to remind us what it is that we're focusing on today. The creative power of thought, that's humanity's rediscovery. You see, everything that we're experiencing in our lives is a result of our thoughts about it. And yet it's so easy to fall into the belief that all about us in our experience is not our responsibility and that it's outside of our area of control. That's what we studied about in A Course in Miracles today, which is always nice to see the correlations. So to help us rediscover the creative power of our thought, I have 4 points that I'd like to bring up to you this morning. The first one is about attitude. Attitude. Everything in our lives is a creative activity of one form or another. Sometimes we create good for ourselves, and sometimes we create things that are not so good. And most of us do a little of each. We do a little good and a little bad. And so as we grow in knowledge and in understanding and in conviction of how the creative power of our thought affects our situations, we begin to create more and more and more good. Have you been noticing that in your lives as you follow these principles of truth, that you're creating more and more and more good in your lives? That's the whole objective. That's the whole point. So then we learn to live through joy and not through pain. For centuries, the understanding and the use of electricity was beyond our power. It was always here, but we didn't understand it and we didn't know how to use it. So when we finally reached the point of being able to direct its action to a certain degree, we discovered that, voila, it can light our homes, it can heat our homes, but it can also kill us if we misuse it. The same thing with water. Water is necessary to life, but too much of water in the wrong place at the wrong time can cause us to lose our lives also. So these are two of the things that rightly used can be for our benefit, but whose action, either consciously or unconsciously, can be directed to our detriment also. So a law or a principle doesn't care about the results of its action. It just works. It just creates what we've put into it. That's the way it works. So we are the ones that get to choose and direct its action. The power of our mind and our thought is the same way. It works the very same way, that what we put out into the law is what we get back in our experience. And the good news is that we can change that. If we don't like what we're experiencing, we can take actions and we can change that. Viktor Frankl was the author of a book entitled Man's Search for Meaning. He was a Jewish psychiatrist who was interred during World War II in concentration camps. And during this time of his internment, all of his family, including his wife, died. Only he and his sister survived. And while he was interred at Auschwitz, he experienced devastating situations, and he realized that his attitude is what determined his very survival. So in a later lecture, he used an example from flight terminology to talk about this. He said that when a pilot speaks of the attitude of a plane, they're talking about the relationship of the plane in relationship to its goal or its target. And he said that when a plane is trying to reach a target, if there's a downdraft pushing it down, that the pilot has to target itself above the target so that it can arrive at the right thing. He said it's the same thing with our thoughts. As we're directing our thoughts toward a certain goal or objective, say being happy, there's a lot of downdraft of negativity in our race consciousness. So we have to head above our target in order to hit it correctly. So he said when we're observing life, when we're observing ourselves or other people, to remember that we have to set our vision higher than what they're demonstrating in their actions in order to see them as they really are. And so this is what he practiced doing during his internment. He practiced seeing the highest and the best in every person, in every situation, so that he could ultimately see them as they truly are and not as they were demonstrating with their poor and bad behavior. He had a story that he told about this. He said that one night he and some others were walking along in the darkness over big stones and large puddles on the one road leading from the camp. And this is how he described it. He said, "The accompanying guards kept shouting at us and driving us with the butts of their rifles. Anyone with very sore feet supported himself on his neighbor's arm. Hardly a word was spoken. The icy wind did not encourage talk. Hiding his mouth behind his upturned collar, the man marching next to him whispered softly something about their wives and their hope that they were doing better at this time. And he said that brought thoughts to my mind of my own wife. As we stumbled on for miles, slipping on icy spots, supporting each other time and time again, dragging one another onward and upward, nothing was said, but each of us knew that we were thinking of our wives. Occasionally I looked at the sky where the stars were fading and the pink cloud of the morning was beginning to spread behind a dark band of clouds, but my mind clung to my wife's image, imagining it with an uncanny acuteness. I heard her answering me, saw her smile, her frank and encouraging look. Real or not, that look was then more luminous than the sun that was beginning to shine. A thought transfixed me. For the first time in my life, I saw the truth as it is set into song by so many poets, proclaimed as the final wisdom by so many thinkers, the truth that love is the ultimate and highest goal to which a person can aspire. Then I grasped the meaning of the greatest secret that human poetry and human thought and belief have to impart. The salvation of people is through love and in love. I understood how a person who has nothing left in this world still may know bliss, be it only for a brief moment, in the contemplation of love." Contemplation of love. So, he later said in his book also, when we're no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Everything can be taken from a person but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. So the first thing is our attitude. Remember that our altitude is in our attitude. So the second point that I'd like for you to consider in rediscovering the creative power in thought is that there's importance in everything. Everything that we do makes a difference. This has an importance. Everything we say, everything we do affects someone. Viktor Frankl often said that within the narrow boundaries of the concentration camp, he found two distinct types of people. He found decent people and unprincipled people. And these different types of people are found in all segments of society. They're found in all classes, all ages, all ethnicities, all genders, all everything. You can find principled people and you can find unprincipled. You can find decent people, indecent people. So we can ask ourselves, within ourselves, what am I aspiring to be in my life? Am I being decent more often than unprincipled? Is there anything that I can do to change the actions and what I've done in my life? Once we understand this, we begin to take responsibilities for our thoughts, beliefs, and therefore our actions. Ernest Holmes said, "We all use the creative power of the universal mind every time we use our own minds." And here's another one that he said that I really love. He said, trained thought is far more powerful than untrained thought. And the one who gives conscious power to their thought should be more careful than those that do not. So in other words, as we understand the power of our mind, we are trained to direct it properly. So we have a greater responsibility. So with increased knowledge comes increased responsibility. And one thing I'd like to clarify about this power of the thought that can be a little confusing, you know, thoughts are just out there. They're just flying around. You can tune into a conversation, to a TV show or anything. There's thoughts that go through your mind. We don't have to catch those and dwell on them. We don't have to expand them in our experience. But we are responsible for what comes out of our mouth. That's where our true responsibility lies. So although thoughts may buzz in and out, you can reject those, cancel them, reject them. They're not what you want to dwell on. But you are responsible for speaking the truth with your mouth. You're responsible for what comes out of your mouth. So be very, very careful that what's coming out of your mouth is reflecting your intentions in your world. So the third point that I want to express to you today is to rediscover the power of community, the power of community for ourselves. This is a community that supports us, that supports our thoughts and our attitudes. Frankl is said to have coined a term called Sunday neurosis. If any of you have ever heard of that, Sunday neurosis? It was a new term to me, but evidently what it means is that when we're involved in the tasks of our work through the week, we're feeling pretty focused and pretty purposeful, but on the weekend, without any direction, we become sometimes bored or apathetic or dismayed and feeling that life doesn't have any purpose. So he said that we need to find our own purpose, and this is indicated by, we have a huge industry in our country called the loneliness industry. Have you heard of that? The loneliness industry. It's very prevalent in Match.com and other kind of dating and online services where people are looking for people to form a relationship with, to parlay the loneliness within them. It's also very popular around holidays when you're supposed to do certain things to show the person that you love. Did you know that Americans spent over $140 on Valentine's Day per person this year? That's a lot, isn't it? That was on flowers, candy, gifts, and it's like Hallmark or whoever tells us this is the time that we show our love. So people think that they have to rush out and do that at that particular time. It's a big industry that's aimed at people's feeling of loneliness inside themselves. Now, I would venture to say that nobody really needs a mate. Some people may like to have one, and that's fine, but I think that instead of needing a mate, that instead what we need is a community. We need a community of people that we can relate to and connect to, that we can feel ourselves around. So some people in communities will complain about cliques. They'll say, well, whatever it is, whether it's a social community, a work environment, whatever, they'll say, well, I feel left out. I don't feel a part of this. Well, you know, Emerson said, if you want to have a friend, you have to be a friend. So instead of waiting for people to reach out to us, we need to reach out to others, to extend ourselves to others. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine, Reverend David Bruner in San Jose, California, was relating an incident that happened to him as a young boy. He came from a large family, and he said that he remembered one time his father was roughhousing and wrestling with a couple of his brothers, and he was standing on the side, and he said, I felt very left out because they weren't including me. And later, he asked his dad about that, many years later, actually. He asked his dad about, why didn't you include me when you were wrestling with the boys? And his father said, well, when I looked over at you, I would always see that leave me alone look on your face. And so I did. So we might ask ourselves, if we're thinking that we're left out, we might ask ourselves, do we have a leave me alone look on my face? Or am I open and receptive and reaching out to people in a friendly way? So One way that we can bond in a community and with a community is by finding a way to serve, by finding a way to volunteer. Renee, raise your hand again. Renee is our volunteer coordinator. So if you have any ideas or have any desire to be involved in a volunteer activity, Renee will plug you into something. She will find something. She's very good at that. And we appreciate that. So please take advantage of finding ways to get involved in your community here, because it helps to overcome any feelings of isolation. It helps you to feel really a part of everything that is. Okay, so the fourth idea that I want to connect you with as we rediscover our humanity is the importance of being responsible and taking action. Being responsible and taking action. The Statue of Liberty in the New York City Harbor was a gift from the country of France in 1886. I learned recently that it was built by Gustave Eiffel, who later built the Eiffel Tower. And it was a gift that France gave to us to celebrate our freedom. It was given after the Civil War to celebrate the fact that we had abolished slavery. That was the main intent of it, to celebrate freedom in our country. So Viktor Frankl later recommended that the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast should be complemented by a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. He said we need both freedom and responsibility in order to be balanced. And if you think about it, he was really right. He said freedom is not the last word. Freedom is only part of the story and half of the truth. Freedom is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon, whose positive aspect is responsibleness. In fact, freedom is in danger of degenerating into mere arbitrariness unless it's lived in terms of responsibleness. That's why I recommend the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast be supplemented by a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. And reportedly, there are plans still afoot to construct such a monument. It's being planned, and they're debating on the exact location, whether it'll be off San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, or even up closer to Seattle. So we love to talk about freedom, don't we? We all love to experience our freedom, and that's all well and good. However, there's another side to freedom that balances it out, and that's a discipline or responsibility. You have to have both places, both things in place if you're going to live a balanced life or if we're going to have a balanced society. Those people in our society who take the least responsibility for how they live their lives wind up experiencing the least freedom. They have to go together. If we don't take responsibility for our health or our money management or our adherence to laws, we wind up experiencing less freedom than those who are more tuned into those things. We have to take responsibility in order to create a world that works for everyone. The San Jose Sharks are a hockey team in San Jose, California. And they had a fan whose name was Sam Targinson, who just absolutely loves the Sharks hockey team. Now, Sam was born with a heart defect, and the doctors told his parents that he would have to be very careful all of his life, that he would never be able to ride a bike or play vigorous sports or anything. They recommended that he kind of take it easy. But from the age of 6 years old on, Sam was absolutely obsessed with hockey. They couldn't get a hockey stick out of his hands. He always admired the Sharks and wanted to be one of them. And, of course, with his disability limitations, this wasn't probably ever going to be a possibility. But working together with the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the Sharks invited Sam to be a member of their team for 1 day. They signed a 1-day contract with him. They invited him to their practice, and they invited him to participate in a game. And I saw a little clip of this, and he was really quite a good ice skater. And he did participate fully in the game. Now, the Sharks did not win the game that day, but I think they won something even bigger. They took action. They took responsibility. They were committed to making the life of Sam Targinson better that day. So we look at today the ideas of humanity's rediscovery, of the power of our thoughts and our actions. And when we do this, we also rediscover our humanity. We rediscover our humanity. And so we do that through, one, elevating our attitudes, remembering that altitude determines our attitude. Our attitude determines our altitude. The importance of everything we do. It makes a difference whether we show up as decent people or unprincipled people. 3, establishing community. It's the most important relationship in our lives, is being in community. And taking responsible action in our lives. So we are the life of God in expression. We are the hands, we're the heart, we're the mind of God. We're the way God, or good, expresses in the world. So we make a difference by where we put our focus, where we put our energies. So using the power of our mind with love is what creates a world that works for all of us. So we have an affirmation here. God's mind and my mind is the same mind. So let's say that together. God's mind and my mind is the same mind. Thank you. Namaste.